Well, hello there, everybody. What's going on? I hope you're well. Before we get into the podcast, I got a quick shout out to throw out. I got to give a quick shout out to Jacob Oginda. He won Headshot of the Week this past week. Really cool shot. Congratulations, Jacob. All right. Now that we got that out the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very excited about this podcast. It's the first ever non-Headshot crew member in the podcast. My guest this week is João Carlos. He is a fellow Portuguese photographer. He is a commercial and editorial photographer. He's also a photography instructor. He gets it done all over the place, guys. And it was a great conversation. It was great talking to him. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Here we go.
All right, enough of that. Get over here. We're gonna start right now. 3, 2, 1, champagne!
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm very excited because this guy is, first and foremost, let me introduce him, Mr. João Carlos. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, man? I'm doing pretty good. Hello, everybody out there on internet lands.
There you go. All right. First and foremost, I want to say this guy is making Motherland very proud. The first ever other Portuguese guy on the podcast. This guy's a rock star, a celebrity in his own right. So talk about what you're doing right now. You're like a photographer, you're an instructor, you do all sorts of stuff. So talk to me about your work and what you do.
Well, thank you so much for that introduction. I'm a photographer, I'm a videographer. I've been shooting for about 20 years now. I think this year or next year is 20 years, and it's been an evolution. I'm an educator, I'm a speaker. I mean, I don't know, you know, we try to do anything to make a living. And I just started working with a couple of brands and then started doing, you know, speaking venues and then workshops. And then it's just kind of snowballed effect. And, you know, I try to photograph and to film as much as possible. But the teaching and the educating is always fun also. So, you know, I'm just a little bit all over the place. I'm in the process of finishing up a commercial for Western Digital, which is pretty cool. And I just finished shooting a cover for Up Magazine. So their July issue is going to be my cover also. So basically, that's what I've been doing.
That's awesome. And how did you get into photography? What are the photography bug? How did you catch it?
Well, I mean, I've always been a very creative person. I've always been an artist at heart. I think I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I asked my mother for my first camera for Christmas. And she gave me, you know, one of those disposable cameras. And I kind of looked at it. I turned it around. I'm like, Mommy, it doesn't have a flash. I gave it back to her and I asked for a real camera.
It was not acceptable.
No. So, I mean, you know, that was back when I was 5, 6. And then I was like 10 or 12 years old. I wanted to be a comic book illustrator and an artist. So I ended up studying fine arts and painting. And then I switched my major, I don't know, maybe 6 months into it, to photography. And that's it. So I've been doing photography like ever since.
Nice. Oh, so you also went to school for photography. That's
interesting. Yeah, I studied at ARCU, the Center of Art and Communication, here in Lisbon and in Almada.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've got, you know, formal training. But I mean, honestly, I spent 2 years at photography school, almost 3. And I left early. I got a job working as an assistant. I was already working, so to pay for school, I was working as a freelancer at a couple of newspapers, and I got a job working as an assistant for a commercial photographer, and I literally quit school and just started working, because I learned more in like 1 month with this guy than I did at almost 3 years at school.
Yeah, that's my perception of photography school as well, is that if you have the chance to just boggle down and work for somebody, it's a better deal than if you go to school for it.
Well, no, I don't agree.
You don't?
I don't. So I teach at a school here in Lisbon. I teach at ETIC also. I've done courses at IAV that I've taught. And honestly, I think that if you have an art base, like like I came from painting. So I had an artistic background. I knew my art history. All that helps me obviously become a better photographer. If you come from, I don't know, IT, for example, and you just want to, you know, start learning photography, and I think there's an artistic background that comes with school that's very important. Now, I also think that schools, 99% of the schools, aren't teaching 95% of what they should be teaching.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah, so I do agree with you on that. But, however, I know that I think art school for me being younger was really good because it kind of opened up my mind and it set me up for what was coming up next. That makes any sense.
Yeah. No, it's just in conversations that I've had with photography teachers, it makes me feel like they're teaching outdated information for some reason.
Well, for example, Viarku, the first 2 years that you're there, and this is the same now as it was 20 years ago, or I'm sorry, at least the first year, all you're doing is laboratory, black and white.
Yeah, that's now, that kills me.
That's very important. But again, Viarku was a type of school that they weren't creating photographers. They're creating artists. There's a slight difference. So I think it really depends on the photography school. You know, in the States, one of the best schools was Brooks Institute.
Yeah.
And they ended up closing. And if you look at their model of what they were teaching, it makes sense. You know, now you've got platforms like Creative Live, for example, you know, that our buddy Peter's been on and taught many classes. And, you know, Peter's got the headshot group that you work in or that you collaborate with. All of those resources, I think, give us a better idea of what's happening now than the photography schools. Yes, no doubt. I do think that there should be more type of formal training in the photography schools of, you know, like they're not doing digital, but if you go to Etique, everything is already digital. So again, it depends on the school. But with the internet, everything has changed, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all self-taught. I never took a photography class in my life. And the funny thing is, most the photographers that when I was learning photography, most photographers I was like revering, none of them were formally trained, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, I think it's also a little bit of a generation thing. And I also think it depends on the type of photographer that you are. For example, most of the photographers that I know that work in a fashion or advertising field do have some type of artistic training, something, you know,
yeah.
Be it art history. Like, for example, in my photography course, I didn't learn a lot of practical photography things that I think I can use that I use today. However, my art history classes are fundamental. You know, and there's something that have always been part of what I do. And obviously, you know, if you don't go to school, photography school or art school, you know, you can still go to museums and you can still culture yourself. But I think there's a gap missing, you know. So ideally, we should have some kind of training to get like the basis. And then it would be more arts training. I mean, if I could go back in time, I wouldn't have taken a photography course. I would have taken a business course.
Here, that's exactly what I tell everybody. Any young person that comes up to me and says, I say young as if I'm, you know, a veteran.
Yeah, I know. You sound like you're ancient over here.
Yeah, I would not. Anyway, any person who comes up to me and asks, hey, I want to get into photography, which course should I take? I always say, take a business or a marketing course. Do not go to school for photography. That's what I usually tell people. But yeah. Because again, I think the courses that we teach, most courses, let's say that we teach here are a bit outdated. Yeah, I've had a conversation with one of the teachers at IPF.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Portuguese Institute of Photography.
Exactly. And it's like you say, the first two semesters they spent, you know, shooting film and developing.
Yeah, but I will say that I am the photographer that I am today because of my my base, like the structure, how I learned photography. Because I know how to develop in black and white, you know, because I worked in film, when I was working, you know, as a full-time pro, many years ago, we were shooting only in film, and 95% of my work was all in slide. So, you know, when you got it down and your readings and everything is on par when you're shooting with slide, it made for my evolution into digital much easier, and I got the results. I know a lot of guys who struggled for a couple years from transitioning from film to digital. So I do think that film does make us better photographers.
I agree.
And, I mean, I've got a ton of friends of mine now who only learned in the digital age, and now everybody's on this huge retro kick of going back to shooting film.
Well, yeah, I agree. But I think that when you're teaching a photography course and you spent two semesters, the first two semesters teaching only film and darkroom, I think you're sending out a message that this, and I don't want to discourage anybody from trying film. I think it's a great exercise and I think it's great. But my personal belief is I don't think it's a feasible medium for a commercial photographer nowadays.
Yes and no.
Okay.
So as a commercial photographer, no. But as a professional photographer and artist, yes.
Absolutely. No. I own a film camera and I'm very lucky because it holds all my other Canon lenses. So I sometimes I use it, but I use it for me. I'm not going to a client and saying, "Hey, we're going to shoot film today." I don't think it's feasible.
No, but there are a couple of photographers in the industry who still do that.
I know.
You know, Paolo Riversi, for example.
Yeah.
He's still shooting film.
Yeah. Okay. I just don't believe that if you tell a kid, "Hey, we're going to learn this for an entire year," and the kid never uses that medium again.
Well, sure. Like, I had Latin for 3 years in high school.
Yeah, well, how much of that information are you using nowadays?
Well, funny thing is that obviously Latin is a dead language, so zero. However, because Spanish and Portuguese and all these other Latin languages derive from Latin, you know, I speak five languages fairly fluently, probably that was a big part of it. So, again, it's all about the basis. You know, it's like you're building a house. You want to have a strong, strong foundation. You can't start at the roof. So
sure.
Now, two semesters on black and white or on film. I don't know. You know, it really, I guess it all depends on the courses. Like my course, we developed black and white film for like 2 years or like a year and a half or whatever. That's all you did. Now, if they were to do two semesters, but we did, you know, we'd shoot negative slides, black and white, you know, take us through the film, but all the different variations of film. And I think that's what we kind of miss out in the digital, you know. There were photographers only shot in slide, and there's a difference in the work that you did in slide than if you shot in negative or if you shot in black and white negative, you know.
But when you went to school, had digital come out yet?
No.
So there you go. You were learning the current technology.
Yes, but I mean, they still teach the same way now than they did before.
Which is, I think that's exactly what the problem is.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. You've been a photographer for 20 years, mm-hmm. and how do you feel the industry has changed since you started to nowadays?
Oof. So many levels.
All right, run me through all of the levels.
Oh, man. we got to be more specific because, first of all, I think that there's a lot of different industries. Second, I think that there are new industries now that in the photography industry that didn't exist 20 years ago.
Like what?
For example, professional Instagrammers.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, you didn't have them 20 years ago. I think now we have more specialties, more specific target markets because you have more people to work those markets than you did before. Now, again, like, I was born in New York. Like, who doesn't know me? I'm Portuguese American. My parents are, you know, they're Portuguese, and they moved to the States in the 60s. So growing up in the States and growing up in New York and then moving to Portugal when I was 15, like, I've worked now as an adult in the U.S. market and in the Portuguese market, and they're two completely different things. So Portugal and the U.S., obviously, or the European market and the U.S. market are completely different. Now or 20 years ago, but now with technology, there's an even, I think there's less of a gap. So the markets are more similar they are now than they were before. If that makes any sense. For example, I know you're thinking of me like, what the hell?
No, I got you.
10 years ago, a photographer in Portugal, for example, wouldn't sell himself as a headshot photographer. Somebody only specializing in corporate portraits or people headshots, people pictures, you know, that you didn't have that.
Right.
You were a photojournalist. You were an advertising photographer. You were a wedding photographer. And that's about it. Like, you had like five genres of photography. Now, you know, people are being, you're specializing in newborns. You're specializing in babies. In like, there's so many subcategories in all the different photography categories. And I think that's changed a lot over the years. Also, obviously, budgets aren't what they were 15, 20 years ago. Budgets are a lot smaller. I think with the digital age, like with the internet, we have more more photography was made yesterday than any previous day before that. And more photography is going to be made and shared today than any day before today, right?
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that it's better photography. It's just more of it.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, I also don't think that people value. So there's been a devaluation of the professional photographer, but there's been a evaluation of photography in general.
Huh.
Meaning, I think brands and businesses and people recognize that photography is a strong medium. It's an important medium. It's the true first language in the world that everybody understands. Right. So it's the number one language spoken because everybody understands the language of photography. You can see a picture. That's it. However, I do think that it's been the most devalued of the arts over the years.
I agree. I think that the mentality of, oh, I could just get a camera and shoot it myself is not something that you would have 20 years ago. So,
that's one of the reasons why I started photography, for example. You know, I said I started off as a painter in an art school, and I had an exhibition at a museum. It was like my really first big exhibition. I had a bank who had sponsored it. Like, it was like an awesome event, and I wanted to make a little catalog for it. And I went and I spoke with a friend of mine, photographer at the time, to shoot that catalog. Well, he shows up, you know, with a Sinar large format camera, and he's doing these large plates on all my pictures. Well, he charged me, obviously, a small fortune at the time, as you can imagine.
Yeah, of course.
I love the pictures, but I looked at that after and I said, okay, well, the next catalog that I do, I need to take the pictures because I've spent all my money. Like, with the money that I spent with my buddy, I could have bought a camera at the time. And I think a lot of people have that same type of mentality, and that's how they start in the industry, too.
I was an actor before I was a photographer, and I needed some pictures, and I just... Well, no, I've always liked taking pictures, but it came out of necessity because we were doing a play, and somebody needed... We had a photographer to shoot the plays in school, but the photographer couldn't be there and I had a camera. So I just shot it. And then as I was shooting the play, I was like, oh my God, I love doing this.
Right. There you go.
Yeah. And that's where it came from. Okay. So what do you think we can do in our industry, in our markets, to revalue our profession?
Well, I think it starts by each of us. Each one of us has to look at ourselves, and we need to value ourselves. We need to say, okay, am I putting the right price tag on my work?
Right.
And am I charging not only enough to cover my expenses to make a profit, but am I charging what I'm worth? I think that's a big thing right there. And then it's a big part of it's education. You know, it's teaching our clients and educating our clients that, you know, if you want to spend $1,000 on a catalog, that you're going to get crappy pictures and you're probably not going to sell any product. And if you invest a little bit more on your catalog and you get better pictures, you're probably going to sell more product and make more money. So it's showing people that, you know, it's all about return on investment. So if you value yourself and you're charging the right prices, hopefully your clients will see that as a, you know, a plus and a value to their product and to what they're trying to sell, and everybody's making more money.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's a process that we have to go through, because there's a lot of, you know, when this happened to me last month, I sent a quote out and people just, oh, we got quotes from other photographers who were a third of your price. And I'm like, a third? I didn't even charge that much. I charge what I think is fair for this job. How can a photographer charge a third of that? How can you make a profit with that?
That's first of all, normally when clients say, oh, I've got a photographer who charges a third, I go, well, my price just went up a third.
Ooh, okay. Aggressive.
Yeah. Well, I look at it this way, and I try to explain to my clients, you're coming to me not because of my budget, but because of the quality of my work and the results.
Right.
I've developed a style, which I'm not really sure what it is, but I've developed a style over the years, and hopefully my clients are coming to me for that style, and they're going to pay for it. Now, I also, for example, for a new client that I've never worked with, and I'm not really sure what their budget is, I try to understand what my client's budget is, and I try to see if it's doable or not in with my rates. And, you know, for example, another problem I find with photographers I see a lot is they don't know how to quote a job. They don't know that, you know, the time that you spend on the phone to get a location, to contract a model, to get styling, to whatever, that has to be paid for.
Yeah.
A lot of clients don't realize that, oh, wait, you know, I need to pay for your lunch when you're on the job for me. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, it's they don't see like any expenses and all expenses that we have that aren't part of our normal day to day, that are part of the service that we're providing for our customer, that the customer has to pay for that. And a lot of people don't do that.
Do you specify all of that information in the quotes you send?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I actually have my quotes are so itemized that if a client says, you know, we're spending too much money. I need to spend 500. I need to save, you know, $500. I can show them where I can take out the 500 or not. So everything is really itemized so that they know exactly where their money is going to.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's a good idea.
Obviously there's certain things. For example, I'm going to put my fees. I'm going to put my assistant fees, studio rental, gear rental. For example, I charge my clients my gear all the time. Even though it's my own gear, I've bought it already. So why do I have to pay for my gear? Why shouldn't my clients pay for a percentage of that gear? So for many years, I rented gear. So I use the same system. I'm going to shoot for you. You know, I need 3 strobes, and I'm going to charge those strobes to my client as a rental rate, even though they're my own strobes.
That's interesting. I never thought about doing that. That's genius.
Well, there you go. Live and learn, my friend.
I'm so glad I had you on. I want to circle back to something you mentioned here. You mentioned specializations, and I've seen your work, and I've had the honor of being in your studio and giving and getting the tour from you and seeing your books and everything. And I've noticed that you're kind of a jack of all trades. You're not really specializing in one genre of photography, right?
I specialize in kick-ass images.
Exactly. That is true. That is true. Well, I've seen them.
Okay, hold on. It's a tricky topic. And it's a tricky topic even for myself. Because I think independently of you might think by looking at my images, I've had a very tough, difficult career. It's been hard to make decent money. It's been hard to make a living. I've created amazing, really cool images, but sometimes maybe I haven't made as much of a profit as I would have liked to. And I think part of the reason for that is the fact that I'm really not that specialized. However, because I haven't been able to go and focus my my marketing and, you know, focus my branding on one specific genre of photography.
Yeah.
So I've suffered in that sense. However, because I started working in such a small market, that is the Portuguese market, as you know.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult. Aside from two or three types of specializations to really only do that as a career. So what you'll find is if you are a wedding photographer in Portugal, you can be only a wedding photographer. You might do maybe some bar mitzvahs or some
christenings.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But you're basically your social event type of photographer. That's the genre that you can do. And you can do that full time and make a good living off of that.
Yeah.
Or you can be a journalist, you know, a photojournalist, and you're only doing that full time. However, all the other areas of expertise and specialization, I find a little bit more difficult.
Right.
Now, I think in the last 5 years, the market has grown so much that there is becoming more and more specialization. And that's going to happen globally everywhere. That's what everybody wants, is everybody wants to specialize in one area, and they all want to do that one thing that they do very well. I don't work that way. And I don't work that way because, you know, I like shooting. On Monday, I'm shooting horses. On Tuesday, I'm shooting motorcycles. On Wednesday, I'm doing catalogs for a fashion brand. On Thursday, I'm doing a cover for a magazine. On Friday, I'm shooting cars for Infiniti. I like that diversity. I like the challenge of shooting something different all the time. But I think my specialization over the years has been advertising. And in advertising and in commercial photography, I need to have the technical skills that I can pretty much take on anything. So
gotcha.
That's kind of why I've gone into this area.
Okay.
You know, I focused on fashion for many years, and I'm really over it at this point.
Yeah. So even though you're shooting pretty much everything, you still have – there's still specific types of photography that you do that you like more than others, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I like, for example, I don't shoot food. You know, I don't – a client can come to me to shoot food, and I won't do it unless it's a look, an image that literally is, like, speaking to me.
Yeah.
I've got one or two friends of mine who are really great food photographers, and I'm going to send it to them. I don't shoot weddings.
Yeah.
However, I will do two or three really high-end celebrity-type weddings a year. But I do those weddings because those customers don't want me to talk about them. Because I have no interest in selling my work as a wedding photographer, which I'm not.
Yeah.
They know that, you know, and these weddings have a lot of celebrities and a lot of high-profile people that are at the weddings. And they don't want a photographer who's going to be like, trying to make his next buck because he shot somebody famous. That's not my stitch.
Got it.
So I've tried to specialize in people. But I think in the last two or three years, I've moved into, you know, just independently if I'm shooting products, if I'm shooting people, if I'm shooting whatever, I just need it to kind of have my look, my feel, and my style, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's all advertising, I guess.
Well, come down to it for the most part. Yeah. I mean, I'm photographing a product, a person, or a place to sell a product, a person, or a place.
Exactly. You're photographing a person to sell said person. Is that what you're saying?
Well, sometimes, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I do like my portrait work is mostly like actors and celebrities and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay. So what advice would you give to a photographer that's wanting to break into that market, break into the commercial advertising market?
Oh man. I mean, again, that's tough. I think commercial advertising markets, it really depends on where you live. Obviously, if you're in New York, that's a really great spot to be, because commercially, most of the major agencies around the world, you know, are working out of New York agencies. However, I don't know, my number one tip, if you want to work into the commercial market, again, advertising, commercial work, there's a lot of different styles of things that you want to do. You know, you can be a commercial photographer and only shoot people, or you can be a commercial photographer and only shoot cars. So it depends, I guess, on what type of commercial work you want to do. I would say always show what you want to shoot. So for example, you know, if you really love shooting products, go shoot some bottles, let's say, of your favorite brands. Not in the style that those brands are shooting, but in the style that you'd like to be shooting. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, develop your own style so that people can see what you can do.
Yes. Well, definitely. But again, developing a style takes time. And most of the time, we don't know that we're developing a style. Like, I know for me, I look back and I look at my work and I can see my style. But when I was creating it, I wasn't thinking of developing that style.
So how do you develop a style? Through just time? Is it just time-based?
Well, no. I mean, time can go by and you sit on your ass and you don't do anything.
Well, no, obviously. It's just time of shooting.
I think so. It's time and subject matter. So, you know, there's that saying is that you're only really a professional, or you're only a master of something after you have, what is it, 10,000 hours at it?
Okay.
So I think that's the same type of premises. You know, it's the same mindset.
Right. So Yeah, that's generally what
I'm... Like, for example, you've got, you know, your headshots are awesome. You've got a great quality of headshots that you've been mastering over the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years.
Yes.
You've practiced that style, that genre. You've tested different lighting, different posing. You've created a style, but have you really created your style? You've been building up as a professional. You've been honing your craft. To now, you've come to a point where now you're going to start to develop your style.
Yes, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah, you know, and the big difference now, and our conversation, if you notice, is going to be a little bit of a mix of things that we've talked about and said before. But
yeah,
one of the big feelings, the big things that I feel about the industry right now, like, the learning curve is much quicker. So I've been shooting for 20 years, but the first 7 or 8 years of shooting was just to really learn what photography was. Like, there were so many basic principles that took me forever to learn because the process before was much longer. Now a photographer who's going at it like crazy, practicing and developing their style, in 3 to 4 years, somebody who's a newbie can become a professional and have a signature style and have an interesting body of work in very little time. When I started, it was much, much harder to do that. So definitely it's about, you know, it's about shooting. It's about creating your own body of work that has an identity. But I also think, like, Glenn Lewis, he's a friend of mine. He wrote a book that says, what is it? I think it's learn how to cheat, learn how to steal, learn how to copy and copy it well, or steal it well. I don't know. I'll let you know so you can, like, add it in somewhere, the link of his book. But sure. Basically, he's teaching people how to copy, and in copying, creating their own style.
Yeah. I think that's, well, most of my work is heavily, and you can see where I draw my inspirations from.
Obviously.
Yeah. Well, my headshots are like 100% Peter. But then my portraiture that I'm developing, I'm still searching for other photographers and looking at what they're doing and like, oh, I want to grab a piece of this and piece of that and just Frankenstein a style out of all the other styles. And I think that's a very easy process to do nowadays since, you know, there's...
Yeah, but see, the thing, that's just it. It's easy to copy.
Yes.
It's not... easy to be original. Exactly. And when we're creating our style, it doesn't mean that you need to be original to everybody else. You just need to be original to yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And that's what takes time. Again, you know, it's this process. Like I've spent years trying to develop a technique, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly subject matter changes and things just kind of fit better nicely together. So I don't know. We spend a lot of time focusing on stuff that doesn't matter instead of focusing on what really matters.
It's also very based on if you follow a formula. So let's say somebody gives you like Peter gives you a formula on how to shoot headshots and what the light should look like and how the frame should be, how you should frame and how you should pose. So if you follow that formula for long enough, you're going to start finding stuff that you don't particularly agree / like about that formula. And that's the areas where you're going to start making it your own. Right?
I've always looked at photographers like chefs. And, or not always, but I think nowadays I look at them like this. And I'm going to show you why. So I love cooking, right? And I cook every day. I cook dinner, or almost every day I cook dinner. But, and some of my friends really like my cooking, but that doesn't mean I'm going to open up a restaurant and start serving my food out to everybody.
Yeah.
And when I'm cooking, I like to improvise. I'm rarely one of those people who's going to follow a recipe. I'm going to open up my fridge, see what I have, and I'm going to throw in a little bit of everything, and then it kind of works out. I'm very much like that with my photography. So you have some photographers work better with a recipe, like some chefs do,
yeah.
And other photographers improvise more.
Sure. Okay. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm more into the recipe style. Well, I've always been that way. Nowadays but it's tough, you know.
No, I think you've been into a recipe style because you've been learning.
Yeah.
And you said, okay, if I learn, it's like this, you learn one or two or three recipes. Like, it's one thing to have a signature dish.
Yeah.
It's another thing to be able to cook something different every day.
Yeah, of course.
Right? So right now, you've got a signature dish.
Yeah.
It's your headshots. But, you know, your headshots is like an amazing francesinha, which is a typical Portuguese, you know, for our listeners. Francesinha is a very specific Portuguese sandwich that you need to eat it with a knife and fork. It's because it's not quite a sandwich.
Yeah.
So you've got your recipe for your francesinha, but everybody else are making their own francesinhas.
Right.
The trick is to make a new dish that nobody else has ever tried out, you know? And that's hard.
Can you even do that nowadays?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I also think it comes down to, so there's some photographers that are timeless, and because of their images are so well done, but done in such a simple factor that they become timeless.
Okay.
Other photographers are very stuck to an era, to a generation, to a certain style. And their work is amazing, and they've got tons of accolades for 5 or 10 years because of that signature style, but then they don't evolve, or their style isn't strong enough to withstand you know, time.
Yeah. You know what I really struggle with is when you do find, let's say I find a lighting setup that I love, you know, that's what I've done for my portraiture now, is that I have this lighting setup that I use, these modifiers, and this, they're set in this particular way that is just beautiful light, you know? And it's tough for me to then go, you know, I have this beautiful thing that I have, but I'm not going to use it. And I'm now going to use something that I know will probably not look as good as that. But
do you really know? Did you try?
No.
That's my point.
Not really.
Well, then try. Just because that first test with the new light setup didn't work, it might have not worked because, well, maybe you got your settings wrong. Maybe the model, for example, that you're shooting, her face or his face just doesn't work for that lighting setup. But the next person that you did for that light that doesn't look that great on them looks amazing. So, you know, there's a cartoon that goes around. It's got two guys shoveling in the dirt. And one guy gives up, and the other guy shovels two more shovels at it, and he, you know, finds a pot of gold or something. A lot of times when we're struggling, when things are the toughest, we have a tendency to turn away and start over or go back or give up. I think when we're testing out new photography, new lighting setups, it's the same thing. You know, sometimes we've got a lighting setup that doesn't work on somebody, but on something else or on someone else, it's just amazing. So it's a lot of error and testing. Trial and error.
Okay. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is I need to be more open-minded.
Oh, definitely.
Okay. Oh, definitely. Good. I'll try.
Yeah, I mean, you know, okay, your focus is on people right now.
100%.
Sometimes when we photograph certain objects, that teaches us how to look at people or how to look at different things in another way. You know, and the way you light people is definitely different than the way you're going to light an object or the way you're going to light in a hotel room or whatever.
Sure. But how – that's not clear for me. How – for instance, if I shoot a watch, how is me shooting a watch going to change the way I shoot a person?
Well, by you shooting a watch, it's going to teach you how to see how light reflects.
Well, obviously.
How light reflects on shiny objects, on glass. Well, next time you're photographing somebody with sunglasses on or with glasses, or if you've got a product shoot where you've got to shoot somebody with sunglasses – you've now learned from the watches how the reflections of the glasses go. So you know that if you're at a higher than a 40-degree angle, that you're going to have less reflection, or maybe you should be using an ND filter or a polarizer filter or whatever. So, you know, what we learn from our other areas of photography, we can always bring into whatever we're shooting.
Okay. I guess that makes sense. So. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I never thought of it that way, but damn it, you've got the knowledge. That's why you're on. That's why we have different people and different perspectives on things. Okay, so you've helped people break into the commercial photography genre, and then there's another thing that is you've throughout the years you've developed a relationship with multiple photo companies. I mean, you're ambassador for SanDisk, right?
Yes.
And Westcott.
Yes.
And Fuji.
Yes.
Can you name all the brands that you're ambassador of?
Yeah. So I'm a Fuji top pro. I've been with Fuji for 3 years. And you know, my relationship with them, well, I'll go into the relationships, I guess, with each brand next, but, Fuji, I'm a ex-photographer. I'm a member of the SanDisk Extreme team. So I use their memory cards and I've used them for maybe 10 years now. Who else am I ambassador to? Think Tank. I love their camera bags. They're awesome. Black Rapid. I use their camera straps. Three-Legged Thing Tripods. They're an awesome company from the UK. They're a fairly young company. They're only like 5 years old. And they've won best tripod company, most innovative tripod company for the last 2 or 3 years. So that's pretty awesome. You know, I try to connect myself with only with brands that obviously that I'm working with their products. And that's how it starts off with. You know, a lot of photographers ask me, oh, how do I become a brand ambassador? Well, my first question is, the first step is look at the gear that you use, and that's where you're going to have to find the companies that you want to work with. You know, if you're shooting with Canon, it doesn't make any sense for you to go to Nikon and ask them to be an ambassador.
Yeah, of course.
But I see a lot of photographers doing that.
Oh, good.
A lot of photographers turn to brands and say, oh, well, you know, if you send me a camera strap, I'll gladly switch to your brand. It doesn't work that way. I've bought products from all the companies that I now work with as a brand ambassador. I'm not in it because I want free shit. Because you know what? It's not free. I need to create content for the brands that I work with. I give them images. In exchange for this, they're giving me product and I'm becoming a brand ambassador. So there's a lot of back and forth as far as give and take and what the brands give and what I can give to the brand. Now, I didn't answer your question yet, was how...
How do you build the relationship with those companies?
I mean, I build the relationships with these companies the same way I build relationships with my customers. It's first of all, I have kick-ass images, and right. you need to have amazing images that the general public and the specific public, which is the photographers, can look at, and most of them say, you know, wow, we like his images, we respect his work. So the brands that I work with, obviously, they respect my talent as a photographer, and that comes first. Then it helps if you've got a big social media following. Right. I don't have a major social media following. So all you listeners out there, if you guys want to follow me on Instagram, it's João Carlos Photo. That'd be awesome.
Get in there, people.
Get in there. You know, so to have a social media following, the brands like that also. So that's important. And then, you know, I've connected with my brands, each of them in a different way. There's no specific way to become a brand ambassador. I would say focus above all on your careers, focus on your work and on your customers, and the brands eventually will notice you. The first brand that I picked up was Westcott. And, you know, I had some of their modifiers. I had some of their lights already. I had reflectors. I had scrim gyms. You know, I was one of their users. And I was at a trade show, Photo Expo Plus in New York. And I was at their booth. And I'm looking at the pictures on the booth. It was my first time, I think, at a trade show. This was like back in 2008. And I'm talking to someone. I didn't know who they were at the time at the booth. And I'm talking to them. And I'm looking at the images. And I go, well, how do I get my pictures on your booth? And the woman laughed and she smiled at the time. She's like, well, you know, you have to have a certain quality and you have to be this and you have to be that. And I'm like, well, my pictures are better than all these pictures. And I was super arrogant, super cocky. And normally that doesn't go off well. But I guess I wasn't arrogant. I was just really confident. And when she looked at my portfolio at the time, she was kind of blown away and she liked my work. And they were just starting off their ambassadors program. And, you know, 1 year later, my pictures, I think I had 8 of them on the booth that year, the following year.
Nice.
So, it goes about goals. Like, SanDisk was different. In 2010, I won the Hasselblad Masters Award. And I was lucky enough to get the cover of the Masters book. Well, that year, in 2010, at Photokina, that's where the book was launched, I went to every single major brand that I was working with personally, you know, brands that I used, and I looked for their marketing managers and I hit them up and I'm like, look, I've got awesome work. I've got this style. You guys probably don't have anybody, you know, I'd look and see if there was anybody kind of with my look and my feel, and maybe they didn't have anyone. And, you know, you guys are missing someone with my look and my feel. So that year I picked up SanDisk. They were actually one of the sponsors of the Hasselblad Masters, and I met their marketing director at the time, the person who was in charge of the SanDisk Extreme team of their ambassadors program, and I became one of their first ambassadors. And then it just kind of was a snowball effect. I think maybe the first 2 or 3 companies, I went out and talked to them, and after that, all my other brands that I've become an ambassador to, they've come and they've asked me and they've invited me. You know, Think Tank invited me last year. They were the last brand that I picked up. Fuji invited me 3 years ago, and I didn't go to them. They came to me. So, again, it's about focusing on your work and your clients and putting out good work and doing good things, and the brands will come to you.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a very interesting approach, because most people who think about, oh, I want to be ambassador of these guys, and then they're just going to work towards the ambassadorship program instead of just focusing on their own work. And yeah, you're right. At some point, the brands will notice you if you're doing it.
Yeah. And you know, obviously it helps. Like, I went to trade shows. That's where you're going to meet the marketing directors. You're not going to meet them behind your laptop, you know, at home.
Yeah.
So I've invested, I've spent money. I've gone to Photokinas, I've gone to WPPIs, you know, I've gone to all these different trade shows. Also, I've been lucky because I've been a speaker at many of these trade shows. You know, I've been a speaker at many different events. So I've met other people. I've been introduced to other people. So, again, the probably my Hasselblad Masters Award was one of the awards that brought me closer to a lot of the brands, because it really solidified my work and my know-how and kind of my reputation in the industry. And then it's just been kind of a ripple effect.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. That gives a lot of information out there. I want to know what, throughout your career, there must have been some moments where you screwed up bad, but to this day, you still look back and think about exactly those moments. But we learned a lot about those screw ups. So what are some screw ups that you've done that you're still learning from?
Okay. Well, one thing I think it's important for everybody out there to realize, like, so my shoots, I spend a lot of time now, maybe 2-3 weeks, a month, in pre-planning, pre-producing my productions before they actually happen. So that leaves very little room for certain mishaps and certain mistakes. Right. However, I find it's very important on a day-to-day to kind of analyze my work and my workflow and what's going on. So, like, for example, on every shoot that I've got my bigger team with me, you know, more assistants, and maybe I've got an assistant producer, hair, makeup, styling. At the end of the day, when we get back to the studio, let's say we're out on location, we get back to the studio, we put everything away, we always kind of sit around and discuss the day's events and the decisions that were made throughout the day. I find, for example, like when I'm shooting catalog work and I have to do a lot of images in a day, that the choice to move on to a new look, the choice of location, the choice of time of day because of the lighting, all of those little choices that I make throughout the day obviously have a big impact on the final results. So at the end of each day, I like to look back and say, okay, what should I have done differently today? You know, obviously I can't change anything because I already did it, but I always like to look back. But I do have a story. A long, long time ago, there was a meat packaging company that came to me and they wanted to take pictures of a new product for their packaging. So, you know, it's something that I had some experience in doing, but I really didn't photograph meat. I mean, it was hamburgers and veggie burgers and stuff like that. And it was a company that was all biological. So it
veggie,
was all,
sorry, veggie burgers and a meat packing
veggie
company?
Burgers. Yeah, well, they also had veggie burgers.
Oh, okay.
But they were a biological, so they were all free range meats.
Yeah, organic, yeah.
Organic, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, let's make it so that they're like on glass. And I put them on glass and I gave the meat this whole cool effect to make it look more like bio and organic. Obviously, meat with like a cool tone is wrong, you know? They wanted that warm tone, just got grilled feel. And I was giving them like, it was just really bad. So I kind of stay away from food in general nowadays. It just doesn't really give me that much of a rush to shoot.
Okay.
You know, I love shooting bottles and liquids and stuff like that, but food, not so much. And it was probably because of that experience. And, you know, most of the food that we shoot really isn't real food anyway. It's all mock-ups and you work with the food stylist. Like, you're not shooting ice cream. You're actually shooting, you know, a foam that you'd use to shave your beard, for example. So they're like little tricks and stuff like that I think I've learned.
The best one I've learned so far is milk. You've never on set, if you're shooting a milk ad, it's not milk, it's wood glue.
Yeah.
That blew my mind. Because, you know, for those shots where the milk is splashing out of the glass, if you shoot actual milk, it's not dense enough, so it's too splashy. Whereas wood glue has a stronger viscosity, so it holds its shape better. And it's, I don't even know. I've never done it, but I've seen it. I've seen a video somewhere about somebody shooting milk.
Huh.
A milk ad, and it's like, I was like, yeah, no way.
I've never shot a milk ad, but yeah, you know, it's all little tips and tricks, or little tips that we kind of learn about trial and error, you know? So going back, I think the best way to respond to your answer is, I don't, besides that terrible meat scenario, I guess for me to not have too many unexpected surprises, I've learned to just really prepare everything as much as possible.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Buddy, we got to start wrapping up. Where can people go to find out more about you?
Well, you got to check out my website, obviously. Yeah. JoaoCarlosPhoto.com. So that's JoaoCarlosPhoto.com. And then on social media, João Carlos Photo. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, João Carlos Photography. I got a group on Facebook, which is Beauties in the Light. I try to be a little bit more active on that, but it's hard. But people can ask me direct questions. You know, I'm an open book. Oh, and I got a blog. My blog is cool because I've got a rundown of my shoots and how I got the shot done and all my videos on there. And yeah, that's about it. And my Vimeo, YouTube, you know, the usual. I'm all over.
Wonderful. All right. I want to thank you for being on and spending some time talking about photography in general. This was a wonderful conversation.
Thank you. I hope you guys liked it.
Yeah, it was great. I'm sure everybody will love it. And yeah, it was great having you on. You know, I admire your work a lot, and it's great. Like I said in the opening of the podcast, it's like it's always good to see people in your country just, you know, make it. And you certainly have. And you're, you know, I'm proud to be Portuguese because of people like you that have taken the world by storm and are doing it, you know? So congratulations there.
Well, thank you. You know, I just really, I'm so honored to be able to do photography as a career and to be in an industry that I love so much. And there's so many amazing, helpful people in the industry. I think, real quick, going back to what we were talking about before, how the industry has changed, I think the industry right now is more open than it's ever been. And there's more exchange of knowledge and information than we've ever had the chance of.
Absolutely.
And I think before, photographers who were neighbors, basically who were competitors, weren't really getting along and weren't sharing information. And now I see that there's some of my best friends are my competitors, and that we exchange information and we try to make the industry stronger by sharing and by unity instead of, you know, diversion.
Yeah, we just had a podcast, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, with two Chicago photographers who are like, their studios are very close to each other, and they've turned that into an act, like they've developed a relationship where their businesses are actually profiting more because they're working together instead of competing. So
competing, yeah. So, you know, take that as don't look at your competitors as your competitors. You need to look at them as, well, in some cases, you know, maybe the guy who's got his studio next to yours he's got amazing talent and he's got a great body of work and you can learn from his lighting skills.
Yeah.
But maybe you've got better business skills that you can pass on to him and you can exchange that way. You know, I also, it's important, I think, like I always work with assistants and interns and I've got teams of a lot of people. And I do that not because I don't want to walk around and carry my gear, because I carry my shit all over the place. But I do that because I want to be, the day of the shoot, I want to have to be able to focus on my client's needs, to be able to focus on what the model needs, on the creative part. So I have a lot of people to help me support that on the other side. Sometimes I have a budget and I can pay everybody, and sometimes I don't. And when I don't have a budget, I've got friends of mine that I've helped them out in the past, that I've assisted them, and they go and they give me a hand. So it's kind of an exchange of services in a way. I tell everybody, all my photographer friends, to go out, make friends in your community, and instead of being rivals, exchange information, partner up, and you will be more profitable for sure.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Together we are stronger.
There you go. Yes, beautiful way of ending it. Love it. All right. Thank you so much, João. I will talk to you soon. All right, buddy?
All right. Talk to you soon. Later, man.
All right, Mike. Guys, that was it. I told you it was a good episode. It was amazing talking shop with João. Very, very proud of the work he's doing. You know, it's great when you see your fellow country mates, you know, be successful. So it's great that he's doing all this amazing work and that he's in like teaching all these people, all these photographers around the world. It's awesome, you know. It's great to see, and it's great to have somebody to look up to that's so close to you. No, you were in the same city most of the time. He travels a lot. Yeah, it was just great. All right, before we get out of here, guys, I just want to give a quick lowdown on Headshot Crew. If you're not a member of the Headshot Crew, give it a shot. We now have a free month. You no longer need the code, I think. Yeah, you don't need the code. So just sign up for a free month. What do you got to lose? You got absolutely nothing to lose. It's a free month. You get to be a part of the world's premier headshot photography community. It's a very supportive community. We're awesome, guys. Just take me up on it. Join the crew. Free month. And if you love it, which I guarantee you will, you'll stay forever, guys. It's like, it's an amazing community. All right? All right, guys. I will talk to you guys probably next week. It's a weekly show. So have a great rest of day and enjoy yourself. And I will talk to you guys when I talk to you. All right? Bye.